Hi there, and welcome along to this racing postcast. It is Monday, the 22nd of November. I'm Maddie Playle, and this week it's just myself and Lee Mottershead to look back at the weekend's action and look ahead to a cracking Newbury Winter Festival coming up this weekend as well. Lee was at Haydock on Saturday, so he has the inside scoop for us on Appleutard, the electric winner of the Betfair Chase. So that's one of the big events that we're going to be talking about. Also, Bob Ollinger, he made his chasing debut at Goran over the weekend. How impressed was Lee? We'll find out. As well as talking about a possible stayers hurdle contender in Buzz. And as I mentioned, some fancies for the Ladbrokes Trophy, but the Fighting Fifth as well, which takes place at Newcastle on Saturday. So, Lee, seeing as it's just the two of us, we'll have a cushy little chat about the weekend's comings and goings. How was it for you? Did you have fun up at Haydock?
I really enjoyed myself, Maddie, at Haydock. So Haydock was my local track as a kid growing up. I grew up in Lancashire, so Haydock was the first racecourse I ever went to. For the sort of the early years of my racing life, it was my most regularly visited racecourse. But I hadn't actually been jumping at Haydock for probably 5, 6, 7 years, quite a long way, like long time back. I actually returned to Haydock after an absence for Sprint Cup Day 2 months ago, which was a good day, but this felt better. There was tremendous engagement with the crowd. As you'd expect, Haydock is a jumps track. It's not the jumps track that we had when I was growing up, Maddie. You know, my first racing memory has been stood by the old Privet Hedge water jump at Haydock, which doesn't exist anymore. They've changed the nature of the race course. It's now much more, it's a blander, beige race course now. It's lost its character. But having said that, they had a really good day on Saturday. Across the card, there was loads of interest in there. And I thought we had a superb performance in the big race.
Yeah, lots of people talking about the sort of friendly atmosphere at Haydock, and it seemed like Rachel Blackmore, who we'll talk about ever, the popular woman of the race course, it seemed like there was a good feeling of goodwill on social media about it. Would you echo that?
Yeah, there was. I think we had quite a few Irish visitors on Saturday, and I think they really enjoyed it. But I think everybody enjoyed it. You know, you go to a day like that wanting to see stellar performances. You want to see things that excite you and enthuse you and leave you not only basking in that moment but looking forward to moments to come. And I think we had that. We had it with Brave Man's Game initially in the graduation chase, but we very much had it with Appleutard. And there will be always be there are, and quite rightly so, debates about quite how strong a race it turned out to be. And there are fair questions that you can ask about that, but I thought his performance was full of the wow factor.
It was, and more of that a little bit later on. But one horse you mentioned just then who we're going to delve into is Brave Man's Game. He won the Double Daily Rewards with Betfair Graduation Chase as the 8-13 favourite. He had only three rivals, so it was a small field, but he seemed to just exude class throughout, and his main asset was his jumping. He seemed so fluid and fluent with his jumping. What were the vibes on track beforehand and afterwards from Paul Nicholls, who was always rated this horse in the highest regard?
Yeah, he has. He could have run the horse at Wincanton a couple of weeks ago in the Rising Stars there. Wasn't happy with ground conditions there, felt they were a bit quick. So he came here instead. It's a race that he's used a lot in the past, Paul, and with good effect too. He's had some really decent horses win this race. He probably wouldn't have had many as good as this lad, though. You mentioned his jumping there, Maddie, and that is absolutely, I think, what excited me the most. Some of his jumping was sensational. And there was one fence, I think it was the first one down the back straight, heading out on the final full circuit, which he took. You know, you'd like to see Colin Jackson taking a hurdle in his prime. You know, really athletic, flamboyant, got from A to B very quickly. His jumping was superb. He ended up defeating Itchy Feet, who, of course, is a more experienced horse by almost three lengths. We got him running to 159, which is a strong figure. And I think so, two from two now, Brave Man's Game over fences. You couldn't ask for much more than that. He's actually not yet running a novice chase. He's gone in two graduations and won them both very easily. So his jumping has been superb. Bigger test coming up now in the Corto Star on Boxing Day, and inevitably we're all thinking what he might do then in March. Paul has said before, and one of the owners, Brian Drew, made this point afterwards, that he's not absolutely set on going to the festival this season with Brave Man's Game as a novice. I think he will, though, because one of the owners, Brian Drew, who owns a horse with John Duns, he said for him, Cheltenham is a very big deal, and he would want the horse to go there. Whether he goes 2.5 for the Marsh or 3 miles for the longer race there isn't clear. I think they will look at the opposition. I think they won't go there with a lack of confidence, though. I know Paul said after last season's festival, when Brave Man's Game was really comprehensively defeated by Bob Olinger, that he could foresee the same happening this season, i.e. win all the races on the way to Cheltenham and then get stuffed by the Irish at Cheltenham. But I sense this horse is and was always going to be a better chaser than Hurdler. And Harry Cobden was very bullish after the race. He loves him to bits, loved the way he jumped, and he would be very happy to take on Bob Olinger again. And I hope that happens.
Yeah, he is a shorter price for the longer distance race. That's the Festival Novices Chase now. He's 7-1 shot behind Galloping de Champs at 11-2 best price. My Drogo, who we saw come down in that dramatic incident at the November meeting at Cheltenham, he's 14-1 and it's 16-1 bar. Is there a better English hope to go to Cheltenham with this year than Brave Man's Game, do you think? He's the one we're pinning all our hopes on, but he might not even be necessarily going, Lee.
I mean, obviously My Drogo is probably the horse that's also had similar levels of I use the word hype. I don't mean that in a dismissive sense. We say hype sometimes and you almost mean it in a cynical way, in the sense the horse has been overhyped. I think both horses deserve hype because they were very good over hurdles and they're always set to do better over fences. So I'd be fascinated to see how My Drogo gets on and goes back to Cheltenham in December. But I think so far we're entitled to be excited about Brave Man's Game. Interesting, Cobden made the point that he thought the horse just didn't turn up on Ballymore Day at the festival last season. Now, of course, he was also a bit disappointing, albeit, you know, finishing second in the Grade One at Aintree, went up to 3 miles next time out. So you could argue in that sense he maybe has something to prove when he truly steps up to the highest level against the very best horses. But a key part of jump racing is being able to jump, particularly over fences. And I think what we've seen in two starts over fences so far is that Brave Man's Game is an absolute natural and seems to do it with relish.
He does. What about another horse who, well, he's faced fences for the first time? That was Brave Man's Game's second effort over them. But Bob Olinger made his chasing debut at Goran in the first race, the beginner's chase. How about this for a roll of honour? And this is just going back to 2012. Charlie, Dom Poley, Bells Hill, Larina, and Nergamine last year. And Bob Olinger made a successful reappearance under Darragh O'Keefe, because Rachel Blackmore was, of course, at Haydock Park. Some were not quite as happy as I thought they had been. You mentioned their hype, Lee. If there's one sort of hype horse this year, it has been Bob Olinger. He was sent off the 1-3 favourite. Do you think he justified those odds in the way that you were hoping he would?
Yeah, I think so, Maddie. I mean, I don't think I walked out of the William Hill betting shop at Haydock thinking, my goodness me, that was astonishing. But equally, I didn't walk out of the betting shop in any way disappointed. He was a horse racing over fences for the first time, and to an extent he looked like a horse racing over fences for the first time. He screwed over a few of his fences, certainly the final fence, he screwed over that one. He pecked on landing at the first in the home straight on the final circuit, and he was a bit novicey. I think his jockey Darragh O'Keefe said he was a bit novicey, but again, you'd expect him to be a bit novicey. Now is when you want them to be novicey. And it's no bad thing, I think, for a novice to get a couple of things wrong first time out, because you want them to learn from the experience. But I thought the engine clearly hasn't in any way deteriorated, I'd suggest, since what he did at Cheltenham in March, when he was exceptionally impressive. I say he looked safe over his fences. He looked like he was enjoying jumping fences. And he beat a very strong, very solid horse in Bacardi's into second. Now, clearly, I don't think a huge amount was expected from Bacardi's, given he was sent off at 14-1. But he's a good horse. He's run to big figures over hurdles, albeit chasing hadn't been his thing when he tried it in the past. I think it was a perfectly satisfactory, perfectly pleasing and extremely encouraging introduction. Henry de Bromady watched it from the same William Hill betting shop. I spoke to him straight afterwards. He was chuffed. He had nothing to say that was in any way disappointed about the performance. He was suggesting maybe the horse might go to Limerick over Christmas, that race that Faheen won as a novice chaser. And again, with him, it will be interesting to see how they campaign him for the rest of the campaign. He's got so much toe that I suspect they'll stick over this sort of trip and aim towards the Marsh novices chase on the Thursday of the festival. But hopefully we'll see him a couple of times more before then. And as I say, I think it's a case of so far, so good.
9-4 for that Marsh novices chase over the intermediate trip for Bob Olinger, if you are interested at all. Now, from a newcomer making his mark in the chasing game, what about an old campaigner who's been around for a long time? Let's talk about the Betfair Exchange Stayers Handicap Hurdle, the Grade 3, which often throws up excellent performances by really promising horses. This year, Lee, it went to an 8-year-old who was a little bit more exposed, albeit not at this trip, in Don Levant. For me, the story of the race was the brilliant ride by £5 claimer Isabel Williams for her father, Ethan. Clearly so many strands to this success, but I thought it was a real show of jockeyship, as this horse hasn't always been straightforward. What was your main takeout?
Yeah, I'd agree with you. I thought she gave him a lovely, patient ride. She rode him with an awful lot of confidence. And I think that was explained afterwards by her father, Evan, who, not surprisingly, was pretty emotional. He made the point that it's difficult when you're a professional and a father when you watch your daughter riding in races. But he stressed that the idea, the thought of running in that race, and it was £100,000 race, it was a valuable contest, was entirely down to his daughter, Izzy. She rides a horse at home, knows the horse really well, and she thought this was the right race for him, and she was right. It's always a competitive handicap. I'm not sure it was the best ever running of the race. Sometimes you get horses in there that you think they're going to be destined for Grade 1 contests in time. I'm not sure it was that sort of race this season. But the winner, Don Levant, who has run over 3 miles in the past, but not for a while, he appreciated the step up in trip, as Izzy Williams had predicted, and he won it well from a decent horse of Dan Skelton's called Riggs.
Yes, and if we rewind the clock back to 2014, a certain Lizzie Kelly won this race aboard Nick Williams' Orbison. Lizzie had a marvellous career as a rider, now retired, of course, but didn't really seem to get many outside rides after that initial sort of burst of success. Do you think a similar thing could happen with Izzy, or do you think that she could get some more trainers wanting to jock her up after this?
Well, it will be interesting. Of course, what we don't know is the extent to which Izzy is chasing rides from other yards. She rides quite a bit for Tom Simmons, but obviously her father is her main source of opportunities. He provided another winner for Exeter on Sunday. I think as well, there is also a factor of when a jockey is riding for a family stable, their family stable, I think that can impact the number of outside rides they get. The obvious case in point being the jockey who Izzy beat into second at Haydock, Harry Skelton. You know, Harry is the champion jockey, but he's never really picked up many outside rides outside of the Dan Skelton yard. Now, that's partly because I think, you know, trainers, or as a jockey, he's in there every day. He's an absolutely integral part of how the stable is run, as will be Izzy at Evan, which means that there probably isn't the opportunity to ride out for the stables. And I think also, and I think this is a point that I think Harry's made in the past, or Dan has made, is I think if you are connected to a family yard, then other trainers might sometimes be cautious about booking you for a horse in case that horse then ends up joining that family yard at some point in the future. So I think there might be reasons for it. And if he does want more outside rides, then hopefully she'll get them. But at the same time, she's she's hardly doing badly, just riding for Evan Williams and a few others.
Exactly. And her dad seemed to sort of be in full support of her and say how hard she'd worked as well as a child. And you know, it's great to see that paying off. Let's go to the big race now, the Betfair Chase. We've spoken a little bit about Appleutard's win for Rachel Blackmore and Henry de Bromhead. Still only a seven-year-old. So too Royal Pagai, the horse who chased him home, albeit 22 lengths behind. He actually finished with a wound to his right hind pastern. So did Chatham Street Lad, actually. This race, to me, Lee, fell apart a little bit around Appleutard, and I'm not sure how many of these actually ran to form. I mean, Bristol Demai, Waiting Patiently, were both pulled up. Imperial Aura fell. So that's why I'm a little bit sceptical of this 180 RPR. Do you believe it a little bit more than I do?
Yeah, I suspect I do, Maddie. Again, I thought he was visually hugely impressive. If we sort of go through a few of the aspects of his performance, I thought he jumped better than he jumped last season, and he didn't jump badly last season. But I thought there was a sense of electricity about his jumping. He was very quick from A to B. It looked like he was really enjoying getting over his fences. He has that mix of speed and stamina that clearly is going to be particularly effective in a race run on good to soft ground on a largely flat track like Haydock. But I thought that was particularly striking. I mean, Rachel Blackmore was taking a pull, I think, before the third last fence. You know, he was travelling that well, and he won the Betfair Chase without really coming off the bridle. There were a couple of nudges, but basically he's won it on the bridle. You can win races by an awfully long way at Haydock, and it's a place that these days does get some strange outcomes. Remember, Bristol Demai won this by 57 lengths and the first time he won the race. But that was on heavy ground. This was on good to soft ground. This wasn't the sort of ground that was conducive to horses winning by the sort of margins that he won by on Saturday. Now, against that, as you say, Bristol Demai hasn't run his race. Imperial Aura fell when still in contention at the top of the straight. So really, you can only assess the race through Royal Pagai, Chatham Street Lad and Clondor Castle. The Racing Post handicapper, Steve Mason, has taken the view that Royal Pagai has run slightly below his official rating and a few pounds below his best performance. We give him a 161, he's rated 163. Chatham Street Lad's rated 153 over here, 140 is what we had him running to. That leaves Appleutard eventually on this RPR of 180. But as Steve has said in his assessment in the Racing Post today, you could have rated him below that or significantly higher than that, depending on just how well you think, particularly Royal Pagai ran. And having spoken to Venetia Williams and Joe Chambers, who's the racing manager for Rich Ritchie, after the race, they were delighted with Royal Pagai. They certainly didn't give the impression they thought that horse had run a long way below his best. He probably would have preferred softer ground based on what we know of him in the past, but he goes really well on a flat track. He'd won Peter Marsh at Haydock. He's won at Kempton. So I don't think Royal Pagai was massively below a peak Royal Pagai. And on that basis, given that Appleutard has won that race, beating him doing handstands really easily, I think 180 seems fair enough for me. I think you also have to take into account, Maddie, the fact that he's still only 7 years old. He'll be eight when he runs in the Gold Cup. Hopefully he runs the Gold Cup next March. So you would expect him to be an improving animal. And although there's an awful lot of water to go under the bridge between now and March, I think he does deserve to be the division leader, the anti-post favourite, and deemed the one to beat, because for me at the moment, he is the best staying chaser in training. And I think 7-2, 4-1, well, there was 4-1 after the race, 7-2 now for the Gold Cup. I think that's perfectly fair.
Okay, I think we're going to disagree slightly on that one, because I'd still be with his stablemate, Manella Indo, last year's winner. And I explained why in today's paper. How relevant is the Betfair Chase these days as a Gold Cup trial, do you think? It's been quite a while since a horse did the double from 1 year to the next in the Gold Cup.
Yeah, I suppose that the ground conditions and the track itself often make it a completely different sort of test to the Gold Cup. I think it's often tended to be won by horses in recent years like Bristol Demai and Q-Card, who maybe have been at their best in this sort of race. Certainly Bristol Demai has. And you can argue as well, I think, that as a Grade One race coming only 4 weeks before the King George, it's arguably not the best time for Grade One anyway. It's maybe more of an extremely valuable feeder race into the Gold Cup, into the King George than the Gold Cup for some yards. So I think in a lot of years, only maybe a small percentage of the Betfair Chase field have gone into the Betfair Chase with the Betfair Chase as the prime target, if you like.
Is that right, do you think? Considering we're getting towards the end of November, and as you say, it is a Grade One, it used to have that valuable bonus behind it as well, didn't it? Is that right that we should be, or trainers or connections should be treating a race like of that prestige with that sort of attitude, do you think?
Well, I'm not necessarily saying it's right, but I think it's in some cases, I think it is to be expected, in the sense that the King George is a bigger race than the Betfair Chase. It should be seen as a bigger race than the Betfair Chase, in the sense that it's always been the big winter jumps race in Britain, and indeed in Ireland. It's the biggest staying steeplechase in terms of prestige, in terms of a weight for age chase outside of the Gold Cup. And therefore, I think it is right that it's seen by some as the obvious place to go after the Betfair Chase. And the Betfair Chase is on the way to the King George, if you like. The Betfair Chase is a hugely valuable race. It offers £200,000 in prize money, and they've done a great job with it. But if I was a trainer and I thought I wanted my horse to be peaking in the King George, I'm not necessarily sure I'd want the horse to be peaking in the Betfair Chase. I'd be using it as a way towards the King George. I'd be running the horse in the race because we want to see horses running in races. But I don't necessarily think that every horse will peak on every occasion. You look at Paul Nicholls last season, he rues having run Clan des Oboe in the Betfair Chase because he believes that the race, the King George, was left behind at Haydock and the King George was a horse's prime target. So I have no qualms about saying that in my head, the Betfair Chase isn't as big a deal as the King George. I don't think it should be seen as a bigger deal as the King George. That's the bigger race for me, but it's still great to see good horses running in these races. You want to see good horses running in these races. It was pleasing that we had a slightly bigger field than usual for the Betfair Chase, albeit that's seven. It's not a huge field, is it? But it's bigger than usual. And there was a range of abilities in there. And it was fantastic to see a first Irish train winner of the race as well.
Yeah, Chatham Street Lad for Mick Winters. He's always entertaining when he comes to these shores, isn't he? So from Haydock, we go onwards to Ascot. We'll take a quick breather, but when you get back, we'll be talking about two wonderful performances in two Grade Twos.
The Racing Post Christmas Countdown offers you the chance to win the ultimate Cheltenham Festival experience for you and three friends. Travel in style to Gold Cup Day with helicopter transfers from your five-star hotel and experience fine dining in the Chez Roux restaurant with some of the finest views over the course. To enter, simply place a bet on the Racing Post app on Friday, and on top of that, there are huge weekly prizes available as well. Find out more at racingpost.com/Christmas Countdown.
The Chanel Farmer 1965 Chase is a Grade 2, and this year it was won by Lost in Translation, that wonderful chaser trained by Colin Tizard for Taylor and O'Dwyer, the owners, this horse who runs in those minion yellow silks. Been below form for quite a long time, actually, since he beat Bristol Demai in the 2019 Betfair Chase. That was a memorable effort. And this was him bouncing back to form to defeat Master Tommy Tucker and Dashiell Drasher, two horses who do run particularly well at Ascot. Great to see this horse, who's still only 9 years old, Lee, back at something like his best.
Yeah, something like his best. I mean, he ran again to our figures to 162. He was on 169 when he was third in the 2020 Gold Cup, 172 when he won the Betfair Chase back in 2019, but this was much more encouraging than we saw from him last season. He didn't run a bad race in the Denman chase at Newbury, and you could argue wasn't disastrous in the Betfair chase last season, albeit beaten a huge way, but he was basically a disappointing horse last season. But so many of the Colin and Joe Tizard team were very disappointing last season. He was right back here on at Ascot on Saturday. It was a good effort. The reality is he isn't as good a horse as our Plutard, Norman Ellerendo. And I think he would need to be at his PB and then some, and a few other horses to run below par for him to beat that sort of opposition. And I think you also have to bear in mind that he's had, looking at our database now, three bouts of wind surgery over the season. So he's clearly a horse that has got issues, but he's a talented horse. It's great to have seen him back, back in winning ways again, back enjoying horse racing in what was a strong enough grade two. Again, I think the horses behind him largely didn't run to their best, with the exception actually of Master Tommy Tucker, who did run a big race. So it was good to see Maddie. I'm not sure how much more he'd be winning this season, but they've got one in the bag.
Yeah, I sense you're not getting too carried away.
No.
You could write a book about Lost in Translation's history with Deafy DeSoy, and although Deafy was sent off the 3-1 favourite here, and he sort of consented to follow them round, as soon as he came under any sort of pressure, he weakened. What would you do with him now?
Oh, I don't know, Maddie. I don't know. It's tricky, isn't it? Because he has been so good in his prime. I adored him as a juvenile hurdler. When he won the Triumph Hurdle, he had such a sense of resolution and dedication to the cause about him. But that seems to have been lost. It's odd, isn't it? I mean, he had that season when he was the superstar two-mile chaser. He was sent off at 5-2-1 for the Champion Chase in 2020. Clearly didn't run his race there that day, and he hasn't really run a race since then. So not by the standards that we knew of before. This was his first run since a bit of wind surgery, and I think you have to say, looking at what he did on Saturday, it hasn't made him run any faster. So I'd love to see Deafy DeSoy come back, and I certainly hope he doesn't go the way of some of JP's best horses and end up going in cross-country chases or on the Banks course at Punchestown. He's better than that. But quite what they do with him, I don't know whether it's a case of trying to have a hurdle to spark him into life or try something else completely. I'm not sure, but he's struggling at the moment.
He is. One horse who isn't struggling is Buzz, the seven-year-old Grey Gelding, won the Cesarich at Newmarket and returned to the jumps game with a pretty facile win in the Coral Hurdle, beating Some for Someone, Guard Your Dreams, Goshen, who I think can almost go into that Deafy DeSoy bracket himself, although perhaps to a lesser degree. He was the evens favourite, so a victory like this was anticipatedly, but you can't help but be taken with him, can you?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I don't think he's actually achieved really much more than he did when he was second to Abacadabras in the Aintree Hurdle back at the Grand National meeting. I don't think we can necessarily say that over hurdles he is now suddenly a £10 better horse. We don't know that yet, but you had to be impressed with the way he cruised into contention under Nico de Bonneville and then went right away from Song for Someone, who'd won the race the previous season. It was a striking performance. He's a horse who's improved a lot over the last year or two. He was running in handicaps not that long ago off marks in the 130s. And here he is now, a horse who looks now like one who should win a grade one at some point. And it'd be interesting to see how they go with him now. Nicky Henson was talking about the long walk after this on Saturday. In some ways, quite interesting. I don't associate Nicky Henson really with staying hurdles. Obviously, he's had a few, Lammy Surge, Punchestown, he's had some good ones as well, but the Champion Hurdle is the way you would normally think of Nicky Henderson going, but he's dismissed that one completely out of hand for Buzz. and sees the horse's future over further. Well, it'll be interesting to see how he gets on at Ascot. In some ways, it's probably a canny move. On the one hand, the champion hurdle picture is dominated by one horse, that one horse being Honeysuckle. So many of last season's two-mile novice hurdlers or novice hurdlers at Bob Olinger's, they appreciate it. They've now gone over fences, so they're not going to be getting down the champion hurdle unless something goes wrong. So although you can say that the champion hurdle market has no strength in depth this season, I think with the staying hurdles division, you can equally say they're pretty much all much of a muchness. There's no Big Bucks, there's no Ingalls Driver, there's no...
I think that's why people are latching on to him, isn't it?
Yeah, I think you're right, yeah, because he does look like a horse who potentially could be a fair bit better than we've seen before. So certainly the way he travelled through the race, I thought was really pleasing to see. He looks like he has gained more class than he had before. So I think it really will be fascinating to see how he gets on in the long walk hurdle. As I say, there's some good staying hurdlers out there, but there are no outstanding staying hurdlers out there. So that there is room in that division for a star to emerge. And I wonder if it will be Buzz. I think certainly the fact that Nicky Henderson is going down that route indicates he's pretty adamant that this horse is going to be a 3-miler or a 2-miler if he gets into Grade One company. And Nicky tends to be right about most of these things.
And you mentioned there that you don't think he has necessarily yet improved over hurdles, but that is something we see in this division, isn't it? Once a horse gets on a bit of a roll, they can then dominate. We saw it with Thistlecrack, with Paisley Park, etc. How much does that 8-1 for the stayers interest you?
It doesn't at the moment. I've not really got a Cheltenham anti-post portfolio so far. I did back Aplutar for the Gold Cup after Saturday. I've got to be
able to...
Hands up, yeah. I thought 4-1 was perfectly fair, but normally by this stage, I'd have 2 or 3, but I haven't as yet. And although 8-1 is going to look a big price, quite obviously, if he wins a long walk hurdle, but I still think there is that question mark over whether he is a 3-miler.
Okay.
We'll find out at Ascot, and I'm prepared to wait and see.
Okay, we're getting through these things, but there's so many good performances we haven't mentioned. I'll chuck a few at you, Lee, and you can bring in some more if you fancy, but let's just round things up for people. Before Midnight, he won again. That was a thrilling finish, wasn't it, at Ascot in Hurst Park. Strictly a Dancer, he won again back at Haydock. A relentless improver for Christian Williams and his team. And then very nice novices. Jeremy Pass, a novice chaser, who made a good impression at Ascot, and Barry Kello, who won the listed novice hurdle at Haydock, who was really slick over his hurdles. What do you want to mention most?
Well, you've rattled off a list of horses there, Maddie, and they're all deserving of being in that list. I think Strictly a Dancer's progress has been especially laudable. You know, to win three competitive handicap chases in a row takes some doing. And I think there are more races to be won with him. I'll just pick out 3-2 from Haydock, 2 from Ascot. I thought Tommy's Oscar, loved the way he won the 2-mile 3-furlong handicap hurdle at Haydock by a long way. Another horse who highlights the tremendous abilities of Anne Hamilton and her husband Ian as a training duo. I mean, Anne trains these horses really well. They haven't got men and they're all their own, but my goodness, they know what they're doing. So big up to Anne Hamilton again there after Tommy's Oscar. Jersey Bean was wonderfully courageous in winning the 3.5-mile handicap chase at Haydock. He deserves a mention simply for his attitude for winning that one. And I was watching the first race at Ascot from the Haydock winners enclosure, where Paul Nichols was getting extremely excited as Fleming's Tide won, beating the odds on favourite Jazz King. Fleming's Tide, ridden by Briony Frost. Spoke to Paul afterwards, and he was making clear that this is a horse who has very much been a work in progress and hasn't been easy to train. He's taken an awful long time to learn what the job is about. And that being the case, one would suspect there's plenty more to come from him. He's not the youngest for doing what he's doing now. He's going to be 7 in the new year, and he's still the point of his career, he's only had one race over hurdles so far. But I think he has got a lot of ability, and it'll be interesting to see how he goes over the next 12 to 18 months.
I must admit, I watched that race with gritted teeth. I wouldn't want to be Bryony Frost. He looks quite difficult and ungainly, doesn't he, Fleming's
Yeah,
time?
I think there's a lot of ability there, but I don't think channeling it has been the easiest thing in the world for Team Nichols. Another good ride from Bryony, though.
Yeah, and you know that he'll just relish that challenge, won't he?
Yeah, absolutely.
A challenge that we're going to be relishing in just a moment is to try and find you an early winner of this weekend's Ladbrokes Trophy at Newbury.
Are you football crazy? Then Racing Post's new podcast could be just for you. Mark Langdon's Bet Clubs brings all of the best football betting insight from Racing Post's top football tipster. As well as that, Mark will be joined each week by a friend from the betting community to guide listeners through their best bets. Simply search Mark Langdon's Bet Clubs on your podcast app of choice and listen today.
Welcome back to this Racing Postcast. It's the final section now. Me and Lee are off the bridle a little bit. We keep finding for pressure though, Lee. And we've got the latest stage of entries for the Ladbrokes Trophy. It's at 3 o'clock on Saturday at Newbury, of course. £250,000 for this fantastically historical Grade 3. I'll run you through the market now. We've got On the Ropes at 9-2. Eclat de Rire for last weekend's winning team, Henry de Bromhead and Rachel Blackmore at 5-1. Enrillo for Paul Nichols, who we just mentioned, at the same price, as well as Fiddler on the Roof. Christian Williams, again, a name we've already spoken about, has Kitty's Light in there at 10-1. Last year's winner, Cloth Cap at 11s. Potterman remastered at 12s, and it's 14-1 bar. Lee, this is a great race. What's the first thing you try and look for when you're trying to find a Ladbrokes Trophy winner?
I suppose I'm looking for horses who could end up being Gold Cup class horses. Certainly, that's what you always want to see in a Ladbrokes Trophy horse. That's what you always look for when the race was the Hennessy. You look for your Denmans and your horses like that, who probably a second season chaser, who has potential to really step up to the highest level. Over the years, that's become harder because those second season chasers, those horses have come from that the Brown Advisory at Cheltenham and races like that, they tend to go into this race and this season off a higher rating than was once the case. So a horse like Eclat de Rire, who's my fancy in the race, is rated 154. Well, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, that probably wouldn't have been the case. He would have been rated lower, I think, than that. But he's the sort of horse I'm looking for, Maddie. I have to say, I think some recent runnings of this race have lacked that sort of horse, perhaps that reason, because they're no longer as well handicapped. And I don't think there are many in this year's race that I think, ooh, you could be a proper star in time. You've got horses like Eclat de Rire, potentially Enrillo, Fiddler on the Roof, and maybe On the Ropes as well. They're horses that, you know, could step up to a higher level. But most of them in this field are pretty, I think, exposed staying chasers. The reason I like Eclat de Rire is I think he's obviously very lightly raced. He has done really well so far in his races over fences, albeit on a much softer surface. He's trained by Henry de Brom and he's ridden by Rachel Blackmore, which in itself is a major selling point now. He was going, you know, perfectly well when he came down midway through the Brown Advisory Monkfish's race at Cheltenham. He's won again since then. I think he's probably a very good horse, and I think he's not badly handicapped either. We had him running to 161 at Wexford on his return. He goes off 154 here, so I think he is probably a well handicapped horse. There's definitely wiggle room there in his mark, and he's the one that interests me most, Maddie.
Okay. I was just going to say, we've had two Gold Cup winners and a Grand National winner in the last 10 years. We've had Bobsworth, Native River and Many Clouds win this race. So it'd be good to see another one of those, wouldn't it? Do you think Eclat de Rire can do that, truly? You must do if you fancy him.
Well, I think he's well handicapped. I think he's a horse who is very, very lightly raced. I mean, not just over fences. He has had, just looking here now, he's had 7 runs. One of them in a point-to-point. So he's only had 6 runs under rules, 5 completed starts. He's won 4 of his races. So, I mean, he has the potential to be a lot better than we've seen before. Now, obviously, again, I think he would prefer softer ground. Same with On the Ropes, the Willie Mullins trained horse, who has very similar credentials to Total Recall, who won the race for Stable a few years ago. But I think he's the one that, for me, just looks like he's the obvious candidate for one, I think, who could be thrown in. Might turn out not to be thrown in at all. But he's the one I like the most. I think Willie's other two runners too, potential runners, are both also interesting. Anna Mix and Brahma Bull in the Richie colours. But yeah, Eclat Dorée is the one for me so far, Maddie.
Okay. I'll chuck in there. We both spoke about this at the London Racing Club sort of winter preview. And the one I chucked in at the time, and I'm still sort of toying with, is Remastered, who I thought ran really nice here at the hurdles on his reappearance. Won the Reynolds Town last year and strikes me as a prominent racer who is a strong stayer, has had a prep run, which is crucial in this race. So I quite like him at 12-1. And the horse who ties in with him as well is D Machine for Kerry Lee, who hasn't had a run and lost his form a little bit towards the end of last season, but seemingly had excuses for that. They're the two that I'm going to keep my eye on, but I understand picking two English runners against the Irish will be a task. Let's move on to Newcastle, Lee, and the Betfair Fighting Fifth hurdle at 3:15. Epatant, the former champion hurdle winner, is in here, along with Mon Morale, So Royal, Silver Streak, Not So Sleepy, Belfast Banter, and Voix de Rêve. Epatant, she was so good in this race last year. She was good afterwards, but not quite at the same level, although the ratings suggest she was about the same. Visually, perhaps not. Do you expect this to just be another race that she can pick up without breaking sweat, or do you think Mon Morale can pose a serious challenge?
Yeah, I don't think it's a race she'll just pick up without breaking sweat. I mean, Nicky Henson has suggested that there are reasons why she maybe wasn't at her imperious best last season. So I think we can look forward to hopefully a bit of a revival from Epitone, albeit, as you say, Maddie, she didn't run badly last season by any regards. But this is a good race. You know, you've got established hurdling stars in So Royal and Silver Streak. Not So Sleepy is a seriously talented horse as well. Belfast.
Do you remember what he did in the race last year? Not so.
Yeah,
sleepy.
I do. I backed Silver Streak, so I definitely remember what he did in the race last season, wiping out that one. Belfast Banter was progressive last season, and as you say, Mon Morale. And Mon Morale is such an interesting horse because, again, he didn't go to Cheltenham as a juvenile hurdler in 2021, but he then went on to win the anniversary of the Grade 1 at Aintree by 7.5 lengths from a properly useful yardstick in Adagio. I thought throughout last season, he looked seriously good, Mon Morale. Paul Nicholls is adamant he's a staying chaser as opposed to a 2-mile champion hurdle candidate. But I do like him. And I'm not necessarily saying I'm going to be backing to win the race on Saturday. Actually, he's also in the Jerry Fielden at Newbury the same day, so it's possible, I suppose, he could go for that race instead of the Fighting Fifth, but I'm really, really keen to see how Mon Morale goes and where he fits in to this picture. If these all run, it's a strong Fighting Fifth hurdle with plenty of threads of interest in there, so it's a race I'm looking forward to.
I am too. And Adagio, of course, boosted that Aintree form when finishing second in the Greatwood Hurdle. John Locke, who was way behind, won a race at Huntingdon recently as well. So Mon Morale, he's clearly got a lot of talent. So interesting that Paul Nicholls, although he doesn't think he's a champion 2-miler, wants to run him in this race. That speaks volumes, I suppose. Do you think he would have come out on top of Alexa Quilixios last year then, Lee?
I'm not necessarily too sure that he would. I think maybe he was a work in progress, and that Aintree was when things really started to click together. I mean, he did keep winning last season, but Aintree was his biggest test and he passed it. I just think he looks like a very good horse, and I like the way Paul has minded him so far. He's looking to a bigger picture. Not everybody likes a Triumph Hurdle. Paul Nicholls wouldn't be the only trainer in the world who has a bit of an aversion to the Triumph Hurdle. So it doesn't bother me at all that he didn't go for that race. It's in a tricky sort of season because they don't, by the sounds of it, they don't want to go chasing with him straight away. They want to have a season over hurdles. And as a horse who won a grade one 2 miler at Aintree for 4-year-olds last season, he has to sort of start off in a champion hurdle trial to see where they stand. And as we said towards the top of the programme, Maddie, there aren't really many high-class 2-mile hurdlers out there at the moment. The opposition to Honeysuckle is not deep and plentiful. So I think it's worth having a go and just seeing where they stand. And you never know, they might come away with a champion hurdle horse, albeit one who the trainer thinks is more of a Gold Cup animal.
I'm sure that's a good position to be in regardless.
Yeah.
That is the Betfair Fighting Pith Hurdle at Newcastle on Saturday. Epitop 9-4, Mamaroneck 11-4, So Royal 9-2, Silver Streak 10s and 16-1. Bar. Well, thank you, Lee. It's been a thoroughly enjoyable show with you this morning. Before I let you go, have you got a midweek fancy for us?
Not midweek, more weekend again, Maddie. There's a horse that listeners will know well. Riders on the Storm did really well for Nigel Twist and Davis, won the Ascot Chase at one point in his career. He's only 8 years old. That grade one winning day at Ascot was back in February 2020. He's changed stables, Maddie, after last season when things didn't quite work out for him, albeit he still had a fair run at Kempton behind Master Tommy Tucker. He's joined Richard Hobson in the same ownership. He's now dropped down the weights. He'll be running in a handicap at Newbury on Saturday. He's got two options off a mark of 147. If he can be sparked back to life, then that's a very fair mark. So I'll be interested to see how Riders on the Storm gets on at Newbury on Saturday. But say Eclat de Rear is my main hope, and I have played anti-post for the first time this Cheltenham Festival season.
Oh, very exciting indeed. Richard Hobson's a trainer I've got a lot of time for, by the way. I think he's very, very good.
Yeah.
If you're looking for some more guidance towards the weekend, don't forget to tune into Friday's show where all our experts will give you their views on the racing. Until then, have a good week and we'll see you next time.